listening to the FQXI podcast.
Welcome to a special edition of the FQXI podcast. I'm Brendan Foster. Let me ask you, what is the best way to tell the public about physics issues, especially foundational physics issues? What is the best way to get people excited about physics? Should we worry about explaining everything in ultra-correct detail? Do we need a catchphrase, or maybe explosions and violence to get people's attention? How do we even know what works when it comes to popularizing physics? This April, I listened in on a discussion of these questions at the New Directions in the Foundations of Physics meeting in Washington, D.C. This annual meeting is one of the only recurring, possibly the only meeting, that brings together physicists and philosophers of physics in the same room. This year's sessions touched on topics like the quantum reality problem, causation in quantum mechanics, and how to teach physics foundations. The discussion started with comments from three researchers who each put a lot of energy into presenting physics ideas to the public. We'll first hear remarks from Sabina Hossenfelder from Nordita in Stockholm, Sweden. Sabina is a regular blogger and winner of our previous essay contest on Steering Humanity. Sabina is followed by Matt Liefer of Perimeter Institute in Waterloo, Canada. Matt is also a blogger and winner of our contest on It From Bit or Bit From It. Then we'll hear from Dagomir Kashlikovsky from the Center for Quantum Technologies in Singapore. Dag is also a filmmaker who won FQXI's 2014 video contest. Following Sabina, Matt, and Dag, the group at large turns to Star Trek, physics slogans, tiny books, and more.
I think before one can say anything about the question, one has to figure out what one wants to do. So, and I think when it comes to communicating science to the public, there are generally two aspects of it. One is that you want to get more people interested in it, so you want to get them excited. And the other thing is that you want to educate them. And the both things do not necessarily work very well together. So I like to call this the fundamental tension of science journalism. Because on the one hand, you have the popular science media who, you know, has bombastic big headlines and everything is new and everything is exciting. And on the other hand, you have the scientists actually trying to teach the public something, which is, in most cases, not, you know, doesn't have the big headlines and is not so exciting. And in the middle, there is a big gap. Where people who have no background in science have no possibility to get from the popular science media to the more scientific literature where they could actually start learning, you know, real physics. And I think this gap that is in the middle causes us a lot of problems, or at least me, because there is a certain type of people who are, you know, both arrogant and ignorant, who are stuck on this one side and don't know that there is some other side. And these are the people who sent me all the emails that they've solved the black hole information problem without knowing what the actual problem is. And I guess that most of us kind of get these emails. That there is this gap in the middle, I think, is something that is a little bit left over from when we were trying to convey topics mostly in print media. Because then you have to make a choice, you know, you have to decide whether you want to do the exciting thing or whether you want to get across the details. And then if you want to do a science outreach, you go for the exciting thing because you reach more people. You know, even the people who understand the details might still understand this, but not the other way around. So if you want to go for the big bulk of people, you do the exciting stuff. But now that we have much more flexibility to do things online and personalizing everything is kind of the thing to go, I think we could do much better in this, in trying to get people to bridge this gap by letting them basically pick a level of knowledge that they have so that they can gradually learn the terminology and maybe at some point even get to see some equations and you know, have the possibility to search for keywords and learn for themselves a little bit more.
Matt.
Okay, so I'm going to reiterate some of the things that Sabine said, but I'm going to act like a philosopher and read my remarks out loud because I only prepared this yesterday. How should we convey foundational physics concepts to non-physics audience? It's obviously hard to do in a way that's both accurate and accessible. As we found at this conference, sometimes it's even difficult to agree on them amongst ourselves. However, I don't think this is the main problem we should worry about, so I'd like to go on a bit of a diversion on the broader range of outreach, broader aims of outreach, which is similar to what Sabine said, but I want to include one extra thing. So I think there's three main goals of doing outreach, which I'll call inspiration, education, and activation. So inspiration, that's basically making physics seem cool and interesting. So, for example, a high school student might decide to study physics later. Education is the obvious. You want people to understand more physics after the outreach is finished than they did at the beginning. Activation is perhaps something less obvious, but this means that we would like people to actually do something after the outreach. So this might mean voting for a politician who supports evidence-based policy and science funding. It might mean persuading someone to contribute funds to science, as Brendan was saying earlier. Or it might mean that we want people to go out there and persuade their friends not to employ the services of, for example, a New Age quantum healer who claims to resolve health issues holistically using quantum entanglement, something like that. Now, to my knowledge, there's very little research into the effectiveness of outreach for these goals. I've seen a little bit, but not much. That's worrying because it feels good to do things like win an FQXIS essay contest, as well as being good for the bank account. It also feels good to get immediate feedback on a blog post, to give a public lecture to a large audience, and I have no personal experience of this, but I imagine it also feels good to have a best-selling popular science book, or to appear on television in a flashy documentary. But in absence of hard data on how to best spend our limited time and resources, we're going to continue to do the things that feel good, regardless of whether they're the most effective things to do. Nonetheless, I think it's relatively fair today to say we're doing a fairly good job on inspiration. There's people like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Brian Cox out there, and they seem to be very effective. So I don't think that the rest of the community should devote too much time towards that. If we think about education, there's a lot of research on that. There's a lot of evidence from physics education research on what are the best methods of teaching physics, especially at high school and intro level for undergraduates. That research is largely ignored by the vast majority of institutions, and given that we know that the methods work, I think we'd be better off putting our efforts into implementing research-validated curricula in schools and universities rather than trying to educate via outreach, the effectiveness of which is largely unknown. Incidentally, one of the things we do know about good physics pedagogy is that it's largely uncorrelated from the personality of the instructor, which leads me to be suspicious of the fact that outreach is often very personality-driven. So this leaves the third part, which is activation, and I think we could be doing a much better job of that through outreach. So not everyone's going to take action in the name of science, but that doesn't necessarily matter so long as the people who do so are doing it loudly. So we're past the age of mass media, we don't always need to cater to the general public, this is as Sabine was saying, so you can instead go for smaller niche audiences who are currently underserved. In particular, I think of communities like the skeptics community who like to debunk pseudoscience. So they may be a relatively small community, but they're also the ones who are most likely to act in the name of science. And whilst most of them can give you a coherent account of evolution and why it's true, if you ask them about quantum theory, you'll likely get some vague mumblings about waves, particles, and the uncertain principle. But these are people who'd like to understand these things more deeply. We just haven't given them the tools to do so. And I think this is because we've been far too focused on making our popular accounts accessible to everyone. For example, publishers always advise against including any equations at all in a popular physics book. So that advice is popular, is appropriate for a mass audience, but not if we're trying to target these smaller niche audiences who are probably bored of hearing the same vague and inaccurate descriptions in 50 different popular science books. So if we turn back to the question of how we should convey foundational physics concepts to non-physics audience, it's almost impossible to do so accurately for the mass audience, and it's probably best to go for inspiration in that case. However, we can and we should target more accurate explanations with more mathematics, more subtle details to those smaller communities who are already passionate about physics and who are more likely to act on the knowledge once they have it. Thanks.
Yes, I see that my colleagues are so well prepared, right? I mean, I would say that I'll be incoherent, okay, but maybe that's a good thing. So I would go for sex and violence, right? So what I have in mind, right, is that I believe that if you are a nerd, right, so if you are a geek, then you don't need any outreach. You will go for it, okay? So this group of people should not be targeted, right? Because they're already there, so we don't have to do anything, right? They will just go and do, driven by their curiosity, right? They will go in the right direction, okay? So that's the one very small end of spectrum, right? Then on the other one are complete morons, so we don't care about them, right? And then in the middle, there is this mass of people, right, that can be swayed this way or the other, right? So either they will go to White House and, or they will, you know, maybe do science. So I think that this group of people is not really targeted, because all these documentaries about science, they are really boring. Have you ever watched any? So if you do something, so my idea is the following one. If you do something that is flashy, right, sex, violence, thrilling action, okay, and then you slip in a serious science in terms of, in the meaning of giving people a gist of the ideas, not calculations, right, then you can get them hooked, right? I think, and that's the one way to target this middle range. So, you know, I convinced ArcRecord now and Vlatko to make a kind of a thriller, right, about quantum teleportation. When there will be dead bodies and sexy females, right? Women, okay? I don't want to sound sexist or something like this, right? Now I hope that we'll get some fans from Arthur, right, or Vladko. So if it's done in a, you know, dynamic, modern way, right? This is art house, so I would do this flick, like a flick, like Tarantino. I would try. Then I think that it can actually get some attention, right? And then, of course, in this movie, teleportation will be really explained, right? But there'll be dead bodies used to make it more dramatic and stuff like that. So I think that's the way to go for this.
Are they dead before or after teleportation?
They need dead body to, you know, to get the... There is some plot there, right? So, you know, maybe I'll give one example, right? Then I'll shut up and calculate. So, one example is recently there was this movie. In the past, there was a movie, The Fly. Have you heard about it? Jeff Goldblum, right? It was about teleportation. It was okay, right? Then comes Christopher Nolan, who I don't personally like him, but he made this movie Interstellar. And believe me, I have friends who are in the middle exactly. Right now they are talking about black holes and, you know, time dilation and stuff like that. So he achieved his. I mean, the movie is, you know, thrilling, right? And people really, I think, get the message across, right? At least they know that if there is a strong gravitational field, then the time slows down, right? Isn't good enough.
So what I'd like to emphasize about all of this, though, is, I mean, it's very easy to come up with ideas that sound good, but we really know nothing about whether any of this works. So as scientists, we're very good at applying the scientific method in our own work. And when it comes to doing things that are outside of research, we often just forget about it. So when it comes to teaching, when it comes to doing outreach. So there are a few things known about the effectiveness of outreach, not specifically in foundational concepts, but they're kind of boring. So there is one study which I heard about, which was actually about outreach on climate change, right? So they had groups of people who believed in climate change to begin with and didn't believe, and then they made them watch a documentary or something like that, or they gave them some information, popular style information, And then afterwards they asked them whether they changed their views. Now, what do you think happened? I don't have any idea what happened.
Their views got stronger.
Yeah, nobody, really, very few people changed their minds at all. Their views just got stronger.
Right. Kind of so, like this conference?
Yeah. The point is that human psychology doesn't necessarily work the way that you think it is going to. And so I think that we need to find out, first of all, what works, right? There are some very simple studies you could do about current popular science. So, for example, so something that's relevant to foundational concepts would be, suppose somebody reads a popular science book. Can they, 2 weeks later, tell you which ideas in the book were solid, established science and which were pure speculation? So my hypothesis on this would be that they have no idea. They will remember the ideas in the book that sounded cool, regardless of whether they're speculation or not. This is like my personal experience from talking to people. So, what should we do about that? Does that mean that we should, in our outreach, focus only on the very established science if we want to get the message across of what the science says? I think perhaps it does mean that.
No, I don't think it means that. I think the question of appealing to the people who are there, who want to know how to weigh their in, is the only way, effectively. And I would point out that the television programs, the first appeal is, do you like the person and like the sort of things they say? And then I think you can say, well, let's at least make sure they have sound science advisors. And I think you can't do much more than that, frankly.
Well, I think...
I sort of agree with you.
I don't agree, because I think that we have multiple methods of communication. We don't have... Not everything has to be done through a big, flashy TV program. There are smaller communities around that you can get access to on the internet and things like this. And the question is really, what's the most effective? If we remember that what we're trying to do at the end of this is to partly get people to do something, right? We're partly trying to find out, if we do some outreach at the end of it, what effect does that have? It's not just a question of did people learn something or can they convey it accurately? It's a question of do they then take the actions that we want them to? And that's the kind of question we should study.
Yeah, I think we can probably be most effective right here in the remaining 15 minutes by focusing on our needs, what we need for better education and outreach in the foundations as a community. And from my experience in France, which is quite extensive, I think we need to work on a pool of educational methodologies. We're competing with mainstream physicists in physics education. We sometimes have our own ideas, how we can use games or our other ideas to better introduce foundational questions into physics curricula. And we're talking about educational outreach. I think we need to work as a community on a pool of methodologies for various levels of physics education in order to introduce foundations there. This is one thing. In terms of the outreach, there's a lot of it said. I want to say one particular thing. I think the one most successful example of physics outreach in the history of 20th century physics was relativity. Relativity, which, just got into all media and into everybody's mind very quickly in the early 20s. And the key about that for me was the catchword. There was this one big catchword that connected with something in culture. So it had a technical meaning, but it did connect with something in culture. The question is, can we use this kind of trick? Can we use the word entanglement and promote it as the catchword? Can we connect with something in culture, maybe in many different ways? But to me, these are the key questions that we could maybe work on. If we decide that entanglement is the catchword of our community, can we have competitions around that? Can we essay competitions or video competitions? Work on a catchword and connect with culture. So these two things, education and outreach.
But sorry, in case of relativity, right, it was Einstein, right?
like this. So what is what you said was the personality that promoted it.
Yeah.
So this is because you imagine Angelina Jolie.
No.
Saying something about quantum teleportation, right? Or acting in a movie about quantum teleportation. Oh man, I mean, you remember that.
Yes.
For wrong reasons, but you will. So I think it's the personality of the,
Well, we have CRISPR. There's a difference. There's a difference between knowing that something exists and understanding it, though. Does it matter if large swaths of the population don't know that what we do exists, if so long as those who do know about it understand it?
If I add something to this, I also think, you know, as enthusiastic as we are about the foundation of physics, we have to be a little realistic there. I mean, most people care about what is of benefit to them. Mm-hmm. Okay, when it comes to quantum gravity, where you can eat it, it doesn't cure cancer, and that's where most people's interest just ends.
I'm a personal
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just that, you know, by and large, people will be more interested in the lives.
And explain to them that in every cell phone there are quantum foundations, right?
Sure, you're biased. And second, you know, I thought about it. So how to explain this quantum paradoxes, right? Or this quantum mechanical things, foundational things. They have one difficult thing to explain, because they always have this non-commuting or non-measurable operators, whereas the gravity is kind of palpable, you know, can explain this very simply. That's the stumbling block.
Compare it with paradoxes in myth, let's say, in culture, and use a metaphor and it works.
But these metaphors are difficult to come by. If you have one, I'll be happy to listen.
There's a lot to say. I think that in spite of any knowledge of how effective methods of outreach are, we need to pursue them all at the same time and see just how many different audiences we can reach. I think that certainly a style that you propose, like combining it with drugs and rock and roll, is one good way to go. And the success in the movies of all these recent biographies of Turing and Hawking is also showing that personal interest can add to an outreach. The only thing I want to warn for is that there have been many attempts. Well, you have some expert explaining something to a general audience, and I think this also applies a bit to the end of the movie where Flotko is doing the drawings. I'm afraid that for much of the audience, either it will also go right above their head, and it also has a tone which can be found to be somewhat paternalistic. Like, I will tell you how things work.
I see.
And you are just going to listen. And I think that's also not a very effective way to reach an audience. And so I want to warn against that type of approach. And I would also like to mention that, in principle, I think there is a huge audience who are potentially willing to listen to foundations of physics, and I judge that because in recent years in the Netherlands we had in the person of Robert Dijkgraaf, who's now director of the Institute of Advanced Studies in Princeton, a very gifted communicator, and he has been given a series of lectures who were broadcast on national television, drawing in millions of viewers actually, on elementary particles, on cosmology, and several other topics. And people just absolutely loved it. And he did that very well, with avoiding this paternalistic tone and using all kinds of audiovisual tricks he could use. But he's just driving on. You can get people excited by just telling them how surprising and mysterious and wonderful these things are.
Doesn't every country have that? We have somebody like this in France too.
Okay, now I'm not claiming there's
culture
sensitivity. I'm just claiming the fact that these lectures were so successful means that there are millions of people who are potentially interested if only they get addressed at the right level and tone and style.
So I kind of want to follow up on that same point. It seems to me that once initial outreach has succeeded in getting a person excited and wanting to know a little bit more, then there needs to be a next step. There needs to be some ladder that they can access that will take them to the next step, and that will then give them a little bit more detail, a little bit more information, and that will then point them where they can go to get yet more. We can't assume that existing educational institutions are going to be of any help in this regard. Maybe for a college student, possibly, but if we're talking about some 13 or 14 year old who's just seen a nice film and is maybe a little clever and a little curious, they need to know, where do I go to find out more?
Yes, we can attach a link, for instance, to click, and they can go and explore more if they want, right?
Right, and there have to be many possible places, because not all of them are going to be coming to it with the same equipment, with the same knowledge, and so on.
So I agree with that. You need to see outreach and education as not two discrete separate activities, but there's a continuum. Some of these should be able to transition easily from the excitement of adding a popular science account of something into learning more about it, and ultimately into, if they get to the point of learning something in a lot of detail, they should be able to get some sort of credit for that, some sort of academic credit. So we need to think about how we can make this a continuum of activities rather than just.
I'd like to make an appeal for lightweight books that slip into your pocket. In my early days of being interested in various areas of science and marginal things, you could have these Methuen monographs. There were thin books that you could pick up and put. And that seems to me something we've lacked in recent years. I learned calculus from Calculus Made Easy, and was a Victorian book. And it was, again, something you could easily pick up. So I think lightweight accounts that are written for self-learning are something we're lacking entirely.
I think we have time for two more comments from the two of you, Victor. Okay. Why don't David go first?
I mean, just a slight caution about trying to be too centralizing and top-down in this. In some of the comments speak towards sort of grand strategies or working out optimal things to do, and I see some of the logic in that. But I mean, Brian Greene writes popular science books, and lots of people read them, and they sell lots and lots of copies, and Brian gets lots of money for it. And all this seems a good activity, and presumably Brian likes doing it because he likes writing popular science books, and possibly also likes money. And this all seems fine. There might be something Brian could do that would be a better outreach activity, but there's probably something Brian could do that would be even better for the universe than that better outreach activity. I mean, the logic of thinking, okay, what's the absolute optimum thing that can be done, has its place, but shouldn't be the enemy of simply, here's a good thing that I feel like doing, and therefore will do, and which maybe I could have done something better, but I think this will be fun, I think I'll do it well, and it will do some non-trivial amount of good. There needs to be a sort of balance between that sort of bottom-up and the top-down way.
So I don't disagree with that, but I do think that if you're a person who's thinking of entering into outreach, you should think about, okay, what is it that people currently do that's successful, and I should do something different from that. Because if Brian Greene's already out there writing books about, say, string theory, then I probably don't need to write a popular science book about string theory. I should think about...
Well, you're younger and you're new, and you'll bring your own attitude towards it, and you'll appeal to it from your personal point of view, and there'll be other people out there like you. So I think that's what you should do. You should do what you want to do.
But what I think is that you should try to figure out if there are activities that people aren't doing that could be effective. And if somebody else is already doing activities that are also, in some sense, effective, that's fine. But I think we do need to explore new angles. And need to in order to do that, we need to know something about the effectiveness of various.
Nice comment.
So I wanted to add something to Matthew, your call for education and different types of science education. So something that they've actually done research on is the impact teaching history and philosophy of science and physics alongside with a physics curriculum actually motivates the students to retain the information better and think of themselves as scientists, even for those who don't think of themselves as scientists. It humanizes the discipline a bit more, and it's something where there is research going forward about how to change those that middle group that you want and their conception of what science is and how it relates to them. So, okay. If you want research, I can give you that paper.
Okay, last comment.
All right. I guess I want to say that I guess there's two basic ideas here. One is, how do we get people who are already interested in foundations to learn more about foundations, or interested in a particular set of science to learn more about it? The other is, how do we get people interested at all in the first place? And one would say that these two are both very important things to do. But one could also look at the bigger picture of sort of what we as a scientific community really need in terms of urgency. I think we can all agree on that currently the vast majority of people in the population do not really care about science at all. They don't really care about it in the slightest. And this is a big problem, since most of us live in democratic countries and there's a big pressure. Without a public incentive or public interest, we simply don't have the funding to do further scientific outreach, because in the end someone decides on the funding and that's decided by the public. So there's a negative feedback loop here. So I think the most important thing here is, before getting people to even understand what we're doing, to get people interested and think what we're doing is useful to society. And I think that is probably the most pressing matter in current modern society at the moment. And this is very hard to do. And I think the best ways of achieving that, from what my observations, is things like Interstellar and what Doug was saying, in the sense that the first step we need to make is to make people feel that what we do is worthwhile or something to aspire to. Sort of like in the 1940s with relativity and later on with astronauts. There was something that at the school children level, people are interested in. And I think people, if they're really interested and passionate about something, they will find their own way to learn about it. But if they never had that motivation in the first place, they won't even try. And you see that when CSI came out, the amount of people interested in forensic science grew by 250%. And CSI didn't really teach anything about real forensic science. In fact, it was an abomination for real forensic science. But it got the interest. And I think that is the first level that we need to get people really interested in this in the first place. And this will need to appeal to a more humanistic behavior, because that's what most people really connect to.
The feelings, right?
Yeah, the feelings, not really the logic or...
Yeah,
so the feelings of curiosity, wonder, the feelings of personal achievement, sort of looking up at these people, thinking they do great things. And this is really something that we're really lacking at the moment in terms of foundations. If you ask the average population, they don't think what we're doing is very useful. No kid will say, I really want to do quantum foundations when I grow up. It doesn't really come up, you know. And this is something, if there was a TV show like what Suits currently, right, that's made lawyers very sexy. And you need something like that, some sort of thing that appeals to the humanistic behavior, that squeezes something about the life of academics. But we really don't have anything about the life of theoretical academics, sort of people who do theory and think new ideas.
Big Bang Theory.
Can I make one last comment and then we have to stop.
I almost entirely disagree with you, because for that purpose, you only need... It's okay if people are interested in something, but there's no point in them being interested in it if they're not prepared to do something about it. So the people who need to know about it are the people who would actually be prepared to change their vote on the basis of science level of science funding, or somebody who would be prepared to show up for a protest against science funding cuts, right? The vast majority of people, even if they're excited about science, aren't going to change their vote because of it. They care about
you know, healthcare, economic policy, these kind of things, way more. So then this is what I was arguing at the beginning. There are communities of people who are prepared to, they're small communities, but they're prepared to change their vote, they're prepared to change their behavior and be loud about it. And those are the people who can have a big influence.
Thanks again to all the attendees and organizers of the New Directions in the Foundations of Physics meeting in Washington, D.C., specially organizer Jeffrey Boob. Thanks also to our featured panelists, Sabina Hossenfelder, Matt Liefer, and Dagomir Kashlikovsky. On the recording, you also heard Michael Fisher, Alexei Grinbaum, Jos Ufink, Alex Wiltz, David Wallace, Melissa Jacart, and Mila Gu. Visit our website, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, for links to Sabina's and Matt's own blogs with write-ups of their comments here, as well as links to their winning essays and Dag's movie, Seeing Without Looking. I've been Brendan Foster. FQXI, please tune in next time.